Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. April is Earth Month, and if there's one thing I've learned, it's that quality is sustainability. Think about it. When you invest in well-made, durable products, you're not just buying something that lasts longer, but you're reducing the need for constant replacements. That's why I am happy to tell you about the Avocado Green Mattress. When it comes to mattresses, Avocado is the MVP. Top rated by Consumer Reports, 8 years running. They use certified organic materials like latex, wool, and cotton. No nasty chemicals, just pure comfort that keeps you at the perfect temperature all night long. Here's the game-changing play. Right now, you can save up to 10% on these incredible mattresses at avocadomattress.com. Plus, they give you up to a full year to try it out, and they even have easy financing options with Affirm. That's how confident they are you will love it. Head to avocadomattress.com today and save up to 10% on certified organic mattresses. Dream of better. This is the ZabeCast. From the mean streets of McLean, Virginia, to the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. You got 30 minutes for some honest conversation about sports, life, and more? Well, good. Buckle up and let's go. It is a sad day indeed, but the chain gang is dead. Long live the chain gang! Three old white-haired men tasked with carrying around two giant sticks with foam padding and a chain between them, and a third man, also white-haired, to carry a stick with padding and a big bullseye on it to mark where the football is. The chain gang is marked for death. Oh, it'll still be there as a backup. As the NFL has now said, they're moving to Sony's Hawkeye technology for spotting the football. How you doing, everybody? Happy Wednesday, April 2nd, 2025. Thank you for joining me. Just you and I today. Thankfully, April Fool's Day is over. I do think there should be some form of punishment for people that try to pull Twitter-related April Fool's news jokes, although Tiger Woods got him, actually got several high-profile media members and outlets with his tweet that, hey, you wouldn't believe it, but my Achilles, which I ruptured just a month ago, feels great. I'll be playing the Masters. See you on the course. Jason Whitlock got zing, fooled by it. Tracy Wolfson of CBS got fooled by it. Squawk Box on CNBC got fooled by it. It's like, yeah, okay, sure. The desire to still see Tiger Woods play at Augusta National is strong in many. They don't want to believe that it's over. And it shouldn't be over. He should still be playing, sadly. But things happen in life. And life is not a rehearsal. And you're accountable for everything you do in life and don't do. So, that being said, enough of the stupid fake stories on Twitter. Now, because we're living in a day and age in which everything could be untrue, half true, sort of true, bent reality, bent truth, we should make all April Fool's jokes and or pranks in person only, nothing online. Because the healthy reaction to everything is, I don't believe that. Of course, if you're scrolling Twitter or other news feeds for your information for a podcast or a radio show like I do, it'd be kind of nice to not have a day in which you have to constantly go, okay, is this real or is this not real? I wish the note that I saw about who's going to replace the legendary and beloved Uncle Vern on the iconic and pivotal 16th hole, Golden Bell. Or no, wait, that's 12. Azalea. No, wait, that's 13. I used to know these names by heart. What is the 16th hole called at Augusta? Redbud. I should know that. Who's going to replace the legendary Vern Lundquist, who signed off last year for the final time? Frank Nabilo. No! God! And I know that some of you are going to go, what's the matter? What's wrong with Frank? Nice guy. I'll tell you what's wrong with Frank Nabilo, the broadcaster. My criticism is only of him, the broadcaster, not the person. Probably a lovely Kiwi, a charming fella. But as a broadcaster, he is a giant, syrupy carafe of nothing. Zilch. He gives you nada, bupkis. Analysis? Nope. You're going to get platitudes and an accent from Frank Nabilo. And it's not like he's got this great, long, legendary playing career that he can draw from, you know? Like Faldo did. You know, he's got nothing. He's a journeyman with an accent. If he didn't have the Kiwi accent, I tell you what, he would not have the job. The network executives love the accents. Ian Baker Finch, Nabilo, Trevor Immelman, they love the accent acts. But good for Frank, I guess. 16, son of a bitch! Can't they relegate him to some shitty hole like 14? In fact, there was some online poll, or not poll, but it was a question about what's your favorite hole at Augusta? And that got people to saying, well, here's my least favorite hole. And so when they asked what your favorite hole is, it's because, like, how do you say, well, 12 is my favorite versus 13 versus 16 versus whatever? They're all supposedly unblasphemable. But I did say numbers 5 and 14 are ugly, stupid abominations. Other than that, I enjoy the rest of the course just fine, thank you. And that's how I feel. The Masters comes up in 5 sleeps from now, at least the first day of it. So I digress. Let's get to the big news of the day, which is the chain gang and the NFL and the new rules and what didn't get passed, what did get passed, and some stunning, but I guess predictably stupid Jerry Jones comments about how he negotiates contracts with his star players. So they're going to this new electronic system on determining first downs in the NFL starting this year. The chain gang will remain as a backup in case the technology fails. Many people are applauding this, clapping like harbor seals, going, yeah, it's about time a $20 billion league got rid of old white-haired men and a pair of sticks and a chain. But what these midwits don't get, and they'll never get, is that the chain gang was low tech, but high accuracy. That as long as you clipped the little anchor or the dongle to the correct yard line as a way to anchor the new set of downs and the chains for it, then when they stretch those chains from one end to another, unless there was a kink in the chain or there was a broken link, which never happened, guess what that measured out to be? 10 yards. In snow, 10 yards. In rain, 10 yards. In wind, 10 yards. In sun, 10 yards. In clouds, 10 yards. 10 yards, 10 yards, 10 yards. Low tech, high accuracy. Now they're going to have some fancy camera system, which also doesn't matter because it's all about the spot of the football. Where was his forward progress stopped? Where was his knee down? Was the ball in his belly or up near his chest when it went down? Did the nose hit earlier? Was it coming loose? All these things are what matters. The actual measurement, hell, they're not even measuring now very much anyway, because here's a little trick. The chain gang had begun to, not just in the NFL, but in many levels of football. Player gets a first down, they land at the 46.5-yard line. They either round up or round down. Or if it's not quite the 46.5, if it's even closer to an actual yard line, they'll just mark the new set of downs as first and 10 from the 47. Because that's a lot easier than to measure if it happens to be close for a first down, which 90% of the time, if not more, it's not close. And that little, you know, 6 inches of yardage doesn't really matter. But I digress. So they're getting rid of the chain gang, which is too bad because that was one of my dream retirement jobs, to be there on the sideline at NFL games, up close to the action, moderately involved in the contest itself, but without too much pressure. That was going to be it. Now I've got to aspire to be, I don't know, the orange glove guy that stands there and holds his hand out with the orange glove to tell the referees we're still in a commercial timeout for television. And okay, now you can go. I could be that person. I could be one of the ball boys, I suppose, or ball guys or dudes. But, you know, that requires some work. You know, you got to hustle. You got to keep them dry. I could be the parabolic mic guy. Oh, I would love to be that guy. Except it's kind of heavy. You got to hold the parabolic mic to get all the sounds. That said, you could wear the headphones. You could hear what they're saying out there. Fuck you. You got to. That'd be an awesome job. I could be the go retrieve the kicking tee guy. No, they got dogs to do that. Oh, they do? Damn. Anyway, so the NFL makes that move. They do not decide to ban the tush push yet. They did not have the votes. The motion has been tabled until their next meetings in May, at which time they may adopt it. Apparently, according to reporting, there were 16 teams in favor of banning the tush push. They need 8 more to kill it. Seems like it's going to be a heavy lift, but if the league decides to table it instead of just kill it right there, it tells you that there is a momentum or there is a desire by the league to get rid of it. So maybe they can bend some arms, twist some wrists, get some more votes between now and May. We shall see. Which brings me to an electronic mail, and you can always send me them at zabe@yahoo.com. This one from Peter Werfel. Hello, Zabe. I'm writing to ask if you are experiencing any cognitive dissonance regarding your opinion on the Packers lobbying to have the tush push legislated out of the NFL. As acceptable given your history of coming down hard on other teams who lobbied for rule changes. Full disclosure, I'm a Colts fan, but my passion for it has diminished as 1, the Colts continue to wander lost in the woods, and 2, the NFL has gradually neutered its own product by making it, quote, safer, and is becoming more probable the league puts the thumb on the scale for certain teams, but I can't prove it. With that said, I remember when you came down on the Colts for like an anvil for getting the rules changed regarding defensive holding, calling them crybabies, and deriding the owner as a pill-popping, coke-snorting loser. Oh, did I say that about Irsay? I totally agree, by the way, with that assessment on all accounts. This is why it's strange to see you go full endorsement for the Packers. I know they're your new team. You have to cape up for them, but do you feel at all conflicted with Gutekunst and company taking a page out of their guitar-buying Lucky Sperm Club members' playbook? Okay, I've finished yelling at the clouds. Thank you for reading. Very respectfully, Peter Werfel. Peter, you're correct. I did call the Colts a bunch of babies. More about Deflategate than about, I recall at least, about the holding and the grabbing and everything else. Ty Law and the Patriots secondary put the Colts wide receivers in a straitjacket for several years and stopped them from making the Super Bowl, and I know that that was very frustrating. Finally, they were able to get more, what's the word I'm looking for? They got the league to amend the defensive holding rules to the point where the Patriots couldn't just clamp them down because the Colts were such an efficient and deadly passing machine as a team with Peyton Manning, old Lego neck, at the helm. I do believe I knocked him a bit for whining about that. I thought it was more for Deflategate, but the point is, yes, I called you names, but guess what? They got the rule changed. And guess what? they went to the Super Bowl and they held a parade. So that's all that matters. So no, I am not experiencing cognitive dissonance. I think I said, I don't care if they call the Packers a bunch of babies. Do it. Say the worst. We're trying to win here. We got to take away a very efficient play for a rival team. So that's my stance on it, to clarify. I hope that clarifies it. I called you names. You survived being called names. You got the rule changed. It ended up in a Super Bowl. That's a win for you. I recommend every team act in their own self-interests. Now, claiming the tush push is dangerous, the whole fucking game is dangerous. I mean, just a tackle on any given play is dangerous. So I don't buy that angle. I think the best angles, I mean, the best arguments against the tush push are multifold. One is it used to be a penalty to push or assist a runner. That then just kind of got ignored somehow. That's argument number one. Argument number two is that it's very hard to officiate now because of this siege mentality where everyone is on hair trigger alert for this play to try to stop 1 inch of progress in a crucial situation. So guys are lining up perhaps offsides, their helmets are leaning over, guys are jumping, guys are twitching, the referees don't quite know how to properly deal with it. So there's too much tension on the play before the snap, and the alignment has become all jacked up. That's the second best argument. Third argument would be safety. You could claim safety, although I don't know if the data's there or not. We'll see. I think it's going to fail. I think it sounds to me like 8 votes is too many. Unless the NFL decides to really twist some arms. They've approved touchbacks now to the 35-yard line. So this will encourage more returns and more short kicks into the field of play. Okay, that's good, but why don't we just go back to the original kickoff? No, we can't do that. It's too dangerous. Also, they've approved regular season touchy-touchy in overtimey. Both teams will get a chance to touch the football in overtime. So there is that. In terms of non-rule changes, oh, look at this. Christmas Day will have 1, 2, 3 games this year. The NFL basically looked at the NBA and said, oh, it's a nice holiday you have there. Be terrible if somebody came in and took it, which is exactly what they're doing, as now Christmas will fall on a Thursday. Bing, bang, boom, triple header, ending up with a Netflix game at night. Don't quote me on it. I can't remember how many games were actually on Christmas Day last year. I think it was 1. But this year there's going to be 3. And this is what the NFL does. They say, I drink your milkshake. I drink it up. That's from the great There Will Be Blood. Daniel Day-Lewis, Academy Award nominated movie. It's a dark movie. It's a slow movie. But I enjoyed it. You might enjoy it too. I drink your milkshake is what the NFL says. And then the NFL also approved of even more latitude by teams for alternate and throwback uniforms and shells. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Apparently the number is now up to 4 times a year they can wear alternate shells and uniforms. This is good. However, I want to say one caveat. Please, NFL, don't become like the NBA. Don't become a league where you turn on a game and go, and you squint and say, wait, who's playing? Who is that exactly? And then there was, of course, the annual photo of the coaches, which had begun as just a haphazard, hey, everybody, come together for a photo outside here in front of these palm trees, wherever they were meeting, somewhere warm, sometimes Arizona, sometimes Florida. This year's, and some of the years, they didn't have all the coaches. We would look at it in media because it was always fun little exercise every year and look at how the guys looked and what they were wearing, and Andy Reid with his Hawaiian shirt, which coaches wore sunglasses in the bright sun, which ones were squinting like hardos. And there was, I think, a couple years where it's like, where's Belichick? Belichick is like, I'm too good for this. This year, I believe they got everybody lined up, and they got them lined up in a much more, I don't know what the word would be, a much more organized block, and it's indoors. Which, I don't know if I like it or I don't like it. I don't know if I want it more organic or not. I also kind of maybe want them to wear their team shirts so they're easier to see. And I don't know why this photo every year catches my attention the way it does. I suppose it's because these 32 men, we as men on the couch, we spend so much time thinking about, talking about, laughing about, joking about, memeing about these other 32 men who are in charge of our collective football teams. And we either praise them or usually vilify them for being idiots. And so to see them in a photo, it's just like one of those things in time. I wouldn't mind collecting the annual coaches photo. These are hard jobs to get. They're very expensive. They pay well. They take years off of men's lives. So to get them all in one photo every year, kind of cool. Jay Glazer also shared a social media video in which he was with right in the middle of a gaggle of nothing but head coaches on a patio down there in West Palm. And he just sort of panned the camera around. You saw all the coaches in their casual Florida gear. And then Glazer, being who he is, had to point the camera at himself and say, pretty cool, man, pretty cool. Yeah, man, you know Paul. I'm here. Here with all these coaches. Coming up, Jerry Jones, he just doesn't get it. How can a guy who I do believe is a very smart, shrewd businessman can be so clueless and dumb when it comes to how do you pay your own players, the good ones, in the most efficient, friendly, and team-advantaged way? He doesn't get it, and I don't think he ever will. That's next. You are listening to the Zabecast. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. The Dallas Cowboys ought to be a sporting juggernaut in the NFL. Players would love to be stars on the Cowboys. They've got plenty of money. They've got cash money on top of cap money. And they've got history and everything else on their side. But they also have a doddering, nearly 90-year-old oil cat owner who just doesn't want to change his ways. And unfortunately for Cowboy fans, thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. He's botching contracts left and right to the point where there is a fascinating 4-minute and 30-second video of one of the top agencies in sports called Athletes First and several of the agents talking on this podcast about how they got the Dak Prescott deal done. Now, I'm going to punch in halfway through, but listen to how they explain what essentially was a lifetime no-tag clause that they were able to negotiate for Dak Prescott because Jerry Jones was once again late to the party with money and thinking he could kind of do this thing on the fly.
Until they got to the contract that we finalized with them. And it was, you know, eventually called the best contract for an NFL player of all time by Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk.
Why did Mike say that?
The entire structure of the deal, right? So the final deal ends up being a 4-year contract. It's an average of $40 million per year. It's front loaded so that throughout the first year of the deal, he makes $75 million. Through 3 years of the deal, he's making $126 million. So an average of $42 million over the first three. included in the deal is a no trade clause. They can't trade him without his permission, which gives him a ton of leverage. They cannot put a franchise tag on him ever again. So we had that written in there that you will never put the franchise tag on Dak Prescott ever again. He had to play it out once, and now we are going to preempt you from ever doing that again. On top of that, are you about to say it? So we got creative with the deadline being as close as it was when we were finalizing the deal. And we said, you know what? We want you to place the tag on him tomorrow, and then we'll agree to the deal an hour after you place the tag on him, because we want to be able to say that Dak Prescott has been tagged twice in his career. And the next time he's tagged in his career, it will be the third time, which triggers a much larger
tag number. It's never been done in the history of the NFL. So it's essentially a lifelong no tag clause on top of layering it with the no tag clause in the actual deal.
To be clear, having he been tagged made no difference to this deal, but you guys are thinking maybe 6 years down, maybe he does go to another team, and whatever happens, he can never be franchised again.
If he is, it's at a third number, which is obviously cost prohibitive and never been done.
And not by the Cowboys, by all 32 teams.
Anybody.
Yeah. I mean, which is crazy.
Which is, the guarantee, the structure. It was 100% me. Yep. The guarantee, the structure, everything about it was a good deal and the right thing. And I think the part that we always talk about is the deal averaged 40, but 42 was over the first three. And since you can't tag him, the reality was he was going to get a new deal after year three at 42 a year on a 4-year deal, as opposed to other quarterbacks that may have done 6-year deals or 10-year deals that obviously didn't pan out.
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. And the fact the Cowboys agreed to that little stunt of, okay, we'll tag you so that we burn the second taggable time, diminished any potential trade value for Dak Prescott considerably, because the team acquiring him would know that the Cowboys had burnt that second tag on him. Of course, once Dak was willing to walk through the first tag, he gained a huge amount of leverage, even though he was coming off a serious ankle injury. It's the same thing as Dak Prescott. Teams are, I guess, going to finally realize that while you can tag a QB1, it's a bad idea. Because while Dak Prescott is not anyone's dream quarterback, he's still a QB1, meaning he's worth having as your starter on week one, and if he stays healthy, you can win a lot with him. Probably not win at all with him, but you can win a lot with him, and he'll hold the job, barring injury. He'll frustrate you, but he'll hold the job. So that makes him a QB1. It's like Kirk. He and Kirk are brothers from another mother. They're good. They can put up incredible numbers. You can win with them. You're probably not going to win at all with either one, but they're a QB1, and nobody lets a QB1 walk out the door. They don't have the balls to do it. They have to say, at the end, they'll trade him. You know, the Redskins tagged Kirk once, and then they threatened to do it a second time, and then they ended up trading him. Actually, they did tag him a second time. That was the only time. They weren't going to do it to Dak. But, man, I don't know about, the agents talking like this. I guess it doesn't really matter because Jerry's fucked anyway. They're going to either start over with Dak at some point when they decide, okay, because they can't move him. This deal is such that he's not tradable. So it's going to end badly for Dak in Dallas. Of course, this happens a lot with their players. So the next guy up to get paid is Micah Parsons. Micah Parsons is a special, game-wrecking, unblockable player. This was Jerry talking about that situation, how he's trying to go around Micah Parsons' agent to get a deal done. And hearing that video clip there of how Athletes First took Jerry to the cleaners, you can understand why.
Term, yes. Term, guarantees, money, all those things. We've had a meeting of the minds.
Why have you not had that same meeting of minds with his agent?
Well, I don't know I'm the one who has to sign the check, and Michael's the one that has to agree to it. So that's the straightest way to get there is the one writing the check and the one agreeing to it talking. And that's the principle that's involved here. And I understand all the other issues, but as you know, it's not uncommon for me to negotiate directly with players.
Yeah, how's that working out, Jerry?
I've done that, and so we are there. I don't view it as urgent at all. And, you know, some say, well, using the basis that the earlier you get something done, the cheaper. Well, the earlier you get something done, a lot of times the more mistakes you make. And you might want to see a few more cards played, not just with that particular negotiation, but with the whole team. And so I know I'm kind of being a little defensive here, but the idea that the only success is getting a contract done at an early time is incorrect. And I'd rather pay more and get it right than I had paid.
Pay more and get it, quote, right. Well, when was the last time Jerry ever did that? Good luck, Cowboy fans. I feel for you. Because after Jerry goes, which is who knows how long, I think he's got vampire blood in him, probably lived to 100 years old, you got Steven, his son, Jerry the sequel, waiting in the wings. So we're headed towards a chalky Final Four. Is that a bad thing, or can it be a good thing? John Fanta, who's quickly becoming one of the best go-to voices when it comes to college basketball, went on Pardon My Take on Barstool and pretty much defended it, saying, well, guess what? Look at it this way. It is the best Final Four we have ever had in terms of talent, star power, and more.
Give us the positive outlook going forward.
The positive outlook is this. It is the best Final Four that we have ever seen. These four teams, Auburn with Jahni Broome, his return, spectacular. Duke with Cooper Flagg. John Shire, does he actually make them likable? There's something about him. They play so hard, and now he's trying to show that he is the man. You're talking about Florida. Walter Clayton, Mr. Clutch. Are you kidding me? And then Houston, the Cougars. 11 years ago, Kelvin Sampson called his dad, John. And he said, John, Dad, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. I think I want to be an NBA head coach. His dad said, Kelvin, I think that you are best in college basketball. I think that that's where you should be. 36 hours later, Kelvin's dad passed away. Kelvin believed it was divine intervention. That the last words his dad spoke to him were, go and be a college coach. Go for the love of the game. Now Kelvin has put together two runs to the Final Four in 5 years. He's coming up on his 800th career victory as a head coach. And the Houston Cougars showed on Sunday afternoon that they are built tough. Tough in every single way. KenPom was formed in 1996, guys. These four teams, Duke, Houston, Florida, and Auburn, would be in the top 10 all time in the KenPom metric system.
Oh, yeah. KenPom.
Get ready for a heavyweight clash. And not between me and Rico Bosco. On the Riverwalk.
He's not that fat.
San Antonio. Get your cowboy hat. Find a margarita. Because, guys, this is going to be electric. And you've got four boxers who are entering the ring, and all of them believe we're going to be champs.
Good stuff right there. By the way, Walter Clayton Jr. as well as Jahni Broome are the Cinderellas that are the individual Cinderellas that would might have in a previous time lifted their mid-majors to a deeper run. Clayton began his career at Iona under Patino before transferring and blowing up. And Jahni Broome got no offers coming out of high school and had to go to Morehead State in-state before he landed at Auburn. So there you go. That's a good way to spin it right there. Now, for the more negative spin, Doug Gottlieb, who still kept his day job as a radio host for Fox Sports Radio and coached University of Wisconsin-Green Bay to a very bad record this year, 4-28 or something like that. said basically, look, the days of the Cinderella are over because of the way NIL has done things. And he says, not that there won't be a small school that wins a game, but the longer runs in the tournament, not happening. Here's Doug Gottlieb.
Goff, they laughed at the idea that opening it up NIL, which is really pay for play, to all the schools would kill competitive balance. Kill competitive balance. Google it. If you don't believe me, there's articles written in like the NCAA. What a phony defense. It won't kill competitive balance. It makes it so anybody can compete. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Anybody can compete who has a ton of money. Ton of money. And if you don't have the players that you want, that's okay. You wait till this time of year and somebody else who's put all their effort into helping a player become a star, then they lose their players. With no ramifications, no buyout, no non-compete clause, no transfer sit-out rule. So if you don't have to sit out when you transfer, if you can transfer up, and then remember now you guys, there's plenty of guys that are getting an extra year because they play JUCO or NAIA because of one player's lawsuit. If that is the case and the highest bidder gets the best players, no more St. Peter's. No more UMBC. No more Green Bay beating Cal back when Jeff Norgard took down Jason Kidd. Could you win a game? Yeah, I think you could win a game. You know, the winner of our league, Robert Morris, they got a tough draw. They gave Alabama a good game. If they weren't a 15 seed, if they worked their way, if we can find a way to get to a 13 seed, I think a Horizon League team could definitely win a game in the NCAA tournament. To get to the Final Four, as Loyola Chicago did, as VCU did, as George Mason did, as Butler did two times in a row, no chance.
Yeah. And that's just the way it's going to be. I think the next step will be eventually many of the Division I schools will say, we can do our own thing, and they'll break off from what is essentially an unsummitable mountain of the NCAA Division I tournament. They'll realize, and it may take 5-10 years, but they'll say, this is kind of silly for us because we don't want to be a feeder system for Division I. We want to have our own thing where it is at least compelling and competitive. Winning one game or just being cannon fodder, especially if they expand the tournament to another weekend to make it 76 teams or bigger, then it's even more ridiculous. But it is what it is. You can shake your fist and yell at the clouds, or you can accept the fact that this is where it's going and guys are getting paid a lot of money. Maryland has their new head coach. It is Buzz Williams of Texas A&M. What do I think? Not bad. You stole a guy from another school that's kind of your equivalent in the SEC, which is kind of the equivalent of the Big Ten. It's sort of a lateral move. Some would say a downgrade. Many Maryland fans not real thrilled about it. It's a safe hire of a name guy who's had some success in a bunch of places. He's a good guy if you don't want to keep a guy for more than 5 years because he's a stick-and-move guy. 5 years is about it for him, whether it's at Marquette or Virginia Tech or Texas A&M. Buzz Williams comes with an expiration date. Also, I saw where Scott Van Pelt had his thoughts on his podcast about Willard. And I want to just add one more thing about this. You know, he ripped Willard for taking a shit on the porch of the house that he was living in on his way out the door. And I understand that and I agree. But where the anger really needs to be of the alums like Van Pelt and Sheehan and everyone else is higher. You know, there's administrators. There are boards of directors, university presidents, people above the AD and the coach who are paid a lot of money, given tenure sometimes, to make sure that they mind the store. You have this valuable asset, a major sporting program that is good and leads kids to want to come to your school. You must protect it. You must manage it. You need to make sure that you hire the right AD, keep him happy, keep him on board, have him in sync with the coach that he hires so that everybody's on the same page and kumbaya and not darting off to Tulane, not running off to Villanova. It's the people above Willard and Damon Evans that you should be mad at. He disrespected our university. Your university is a clown show right now. They're the ones not handling their business. They're letting their best asset, the basketball program, unravel before their eyes when it could be a huge moneymaker. I mean, it is, but it could be even bigger. ESPN's Randy Scott has thrown a rock at one of the nastiest hornet nests on the internet, and that is recreational bikers, or as I like to call them, Pants Armstrongs. Look, I'm not against people riding their bicycles on roads that their taxpayer dollars are paying for, just like you and I. Hopefully it's at a non-high traffic time. Hopefully it's somewhere out in the country where a motorist can safely wait for a moment and then go around you. But sometimes it's not. So Randy Scott, ESPN anchor, took a moment to film the following, showing his speedometer stuck at 15 miles per hour.
15 miles an hour behind this sad suburban Peloton. Everybody just has to adjust their day while they're out doing their midlife crisis. Oh, now we're going 10 miles an hour. Now we're going 10. Thanks, fellas. Appreciate it.
His tag on the video was, "These monsters must be stopped." And I'm just like, oh boy, you do not want to throw a rock at this bee's nest. The comments are hilarious. Let's hate on the dudes who aren't using the entire road, trying to better themselves and enjoying fellowship with their friends, all because it cost Randy an extra 5 or 10 extra minutes. He then replies, "Keep up with traffic while they better themselves and enjoy fellowship. Not too much to ask, friend." Well, they can't go 40 miles an hour or 50. Another one said, "Just pass them, Randy. It's not easy to bike at 30 miles per hour. He says, "Well, then bike on a different road where it's safer." It was smart of Randy to not try to pass him because it was a winding, woods-lined road that had traffic coming the other way. It could have been a disaster. Another comment, "Oh, no, you had to share the road." Randy Scott, "Share? What share, friend? It's a total box out." And the comments and the back and forth goes on and on. You don't want to get involved with the Pants Armstrongs of the world. They are a vocal and fearless group that will come after you. I mean, I understand the concept. Roads are for everybody. You can't have bike lanes everywhere. Most of the time, you're able to just slow down, give wide berth, and pass the bicyclists. But we played on this podcast months ago the interaction between the entitled millionaire Utah guy on his bike and the car that passed him that he claimed went too close and then wanted to have the cops come and arrest him. And he was the one that ended up getting a ticket for not letting the motorist leave. Ay, 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 ay. Can you get basically the same workout on a Peloton bike itself inside a safe gymnasium? Answer, yes. Is it the same as riding out with your friends in nature, in the elements, the cold, the wind, the sun, and going places and seeing sights? Of course not. But man, good luck to Randy Scott. I bet he was called into a meeting after that tweet. Speaking of meetings, Pat McAfee is going to have some meetings at ESPN. He is getting sued over the viral Ole Miss story that was just too good to check. It almost read like a typical Reddit thread story that you go, that sounds about right. SEC 19-year-old hottie dating her boyfriend, hottie toddy, at Ole Miss, and also sleeping with that boyfriend's father? Ooh, it's got to be true. It's the SEC. It just means more. So this whole thing bubbled up several months ago about a Kappa Delta, whose name I won't repeat here because the poor woman has suffered enough. But, you know, the rumor was, oh, guess what? This started on the Reddit threads that she was dating a guy and she ended up sleeping with his dad. No proof of this whatsoever. But still, that doesn't stop people on the nasty, mean streets of Reddit from propagating stereotypes. And of course, McAfee and his dude bros couldn't resist, so they led their show with it one day. And even though they said allegedly, there was still enough of a reference, and even though they didn't mention the woman's name, if you're Pat McAfee and ESPN, you're the biggest target, you've got the most money, you're the most likely to settle a lawsuit. And so instead of having to go through discovery and turn over all these documents and get turned inside out, I'm sure ESPN's lawyers are like, look, we keep talking to Pat, who's not really technically an employee. We lease his show to air on our network. Not do this shit. But you know what? What's it going to take to make this matter go away? And while I think they like McAfee's impact for the network, and he's got a lot of juice, at some point, they're going to say, look, dude, no more lawsuits, okay? Be your dude bro self with your boys without getting us involved in this kind of stuff. Then there's this. I would have given this gal a ticket to Hollywood right away without even talking about how she did or chatting with Lionel Richie and the other panelists on American Idol, a show that I don't watch anymore. I used to watch it in its heyday. But when a woman comes on the show and nails a song this spot on, with Carrie Underwood sitting right there in front of her, you gotta give her the ticket to Hollywood.
I've been waiting all day for a Sunday night. The tough get rough in a primetime fight.
All right.
It's more than a game. It's everything's right. That's why we're waiting all day for a Sunday night. All right, what a night. It's finally here. Sunday night football's kicking into high gear. The stars have arrived. Come on, get up and cheer. The NFL's best have come to play. There's just one thing left to say. Waiting all day for a Sunday night. The tough get rough in a primetime fight. It's more than a game. It's everything's right. That's why we're waiting all day for a Sunday night.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Straight to Hollywood. You got to give it to her, even though she has not one but two nose rings, which I don't usually see. I guess she likes it, whatever. Hell of a singer. And by the way, Carrie Underwood is still absolute fire. More makeup, a little bit more plastic surgery, you can tell, creeping in to the Oklahoma dime that is Carrie Underwood, but still throwing in the high 90s. That'll do it for me today. Thank you so much for listening. If you have a second, a rate and review on the old podcast platform that you listen to this on would go so far. The algorithm just loves for those 5 stars in the comments to help people find me and say, hey, that is a good podcast from a guy who sounds like he has some interesting opinions about things. Thank you for that, and tell a friend if you don't mind. You can get me 5 days a week with the boys, Scott and Solly, from back in the Fox Sports Radio days, most every Friday. We missed last Friday because I was in Vegas, but we will make it up in a future podcast, I promise you that. Just go to zabe.com/premium and sign up today. Plus, you get these Monday through Thursday podcasts ad-free. So you got that going for you as well, which is nice. A mere $5 a month, which is what this podcast started as, and it's what it's going to die as whenever I decide to stop doing it. Thanks for listening. Have a great Wednesday, and we will see you next time. Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.